Chapter 81. Ladies and gentlemen, I assure you it is with sincere regret that I regret to be compelled to inform you that Iago, who was to have played Mr. Wilson, I beg your pardon, ladies and gentlemen, but I am naturally somewhat agitated. Applause, I mean, Mr. Wilson, who was to have played Iago, is that is, has been, or, in other words, ladies and gentlemen, the fact is that I have just received a note in which I am informed that Iago is unavoidably detained at the post office this evening. Under these circumstances, I trust a amateur performance a another gentleman undertaken to read the part request indulgence for a short time courtesy and kindness of a British audience. Apostrophe overwhelming applause. Exit Mr. Sempronius Gattleton, and curtain falls. The audience were, of course, exceedingly good-humored. The whole business was a joke, and accordingly they waited for an hour with the utmost patience, being enlivened by an interlude of rout cakes and lemonade. It appeared by Mr. Sempronius's subsequent explanation that the delay would not have been so great had it not so happened that when the substitute Iago had finished dressing, and just as the play was on the point of commencing, the original Iago unexpectedly arrived. The former was therefore compelled to undress, and the latter to dress for his part, which, as he found some difficulty in getting into his clothes, occupied no inconsiderable time. At last, the tragedy began in real earnest. It went off well enough, until the third scene of the first act, in which Othello addresses the Senate. The only remarkable circumstance being, that as Iago could not get on any of the stage boots, in consequence of his feet being violently swelled with the heat and excitement, he was under the necessity of playing the part in a pair of Wellingtons, which contrasted rather oddly with his richly embroidered pantaloons. When Othello started with his address to the Senate, whose dignity was represented by the Duke, a carpenter, two men engaged on the recommendation of the gardener, and a boy, Mrs. Porter found the opportunity she so anxiously sought. Mr. Sempronius proceeded. Most potent, grave, and reverend signiors, my very noble and approved good masters, that I have ta'en away this old man's daughter, it is most true. Rude am I in my speech, apostrophe, is that right? Apostrophe, apostrophe, whispered Mrs. Porter to Uncle Tom. No. Apostrophe, tell him so, then. Apostrophe, I will. Sam. Apostrophe, called out Uncle Tom, that's wrong, my boy. Apostrophe, what's wrong, Uncle? Apostrophe, apostrophe, demanded Othello, quite forgetting the dignity of his situation. You've left out something. True, I have married, apostrophe, oh, ah. Apostrophe, apostrophe, said Mr. Sempronius, endeavoring to hide his confusion as much and as ineffectually as the audience attempted to conceal their half-suppressed tittering by coughing with extraordinary violence. True, I have married her, the very head and front of my offending at this extent, no more. Aside, why don't you prompt, father? Apostrophe, apostrophe, because I've mislaid my spectacles, apostrophe, said poor Mr. Gattleton, almost dead with the heat and bustle. There, now it's rude am I, apostrophe, said Uncle Tom. Yes, I know it is, apostrophe, returned the unfortunate manager, proceeding with his part. It would be useless and tiresome to quote the number of instances in which Uncle Tom, now completely in his element, and instigated by the mischievous Mrs. Porter, corrected the mistakes of the performers. Suffice it to say, that having mounted his hobby, nothing could induce him to dismount. So, during the whole remainder of the play, he performed a kind of running accompaniment, by muttering everybody's part as it was being delivered, in an undertone. The audience were highly amused, Mrs. Porter delighted, the performers embarrassed. Uncle Tom never was better pleased in all his life, and Uncle Tom's nephews and nieces had never, although the declared heirs to his large property, so heartily wished him gathered to his father's, as on that memorable occasion. Several other minor causes too, united to damp the ardor of the dramatis personae. None of the performers could walk in their tights or move their arms in their jackets. The pantaloons were too small, the boots too large, and the swords of all shapes and sizes. Mr. Evans, naturally too tall for the scenery, wore a black velvet hat with immense white plumes, the glory of which was lost in the flies. Apostrophe and the only other inconvenience of which was, that when it was off his head he could not put it on, and when it was on he could not take it off. Notwithstanding all his practice too, he fell with his head and shoulders as neatly through one of the side scenes, as a harlequin would jump through a panel in a Christmas pantomime. The pianoforte player, overpowered by the extreme heat of the room, fainted away at the commencement of the entertainments, leaving the music of Masaniello to the flute and violoncello. The orchestra complained that Mr. Harley put them out, and Mr. Harley declared that the orchestra prevented his singing a note. The fishermen, who were hired for the occasion, revolted to the very life, positively refusing to play without an increased allowance of spirits, and, their demand being complied with, getting drunk in the eruption scene as naturally as possible. The red fire, which was burned at the conclusion of the second act, not only nearly suffocated the audience, but nearly set the house on fire into the bargain, and, as it was, the remainder of the piece was acted in a thick fog. In short, the whole affair was, as Mrs. Joseph Porter triumphantly told everybody, a complete failure. Apostrophe the audience went home at 4 o'clock in the morning, exhausted with laughter, suffering from severe headaches, and smelling terribly of brimstone and gunpowder. The Messrs. Gadolton, Senior and Junior, retired to rest, with the vague idea of emigrating to Swan River early in the ensuing week. Rose Villa has once again resumed its wonted appearance. The dining room furniture has been replaced. The tables are as nicely polished as formerly. The horsehair chairs are ranged against the wall, as regularly as ever. Venetian blinds have been fitted to every window in the house, to intercept the prying gaze of Mrs. Joseph Porter. The subject of theatricals is never mentioned in the Gadolton family, unless, indeed, by Uncle Tom, who cannot refrain from sometimes expressing his surprise and regret at finding that his nephews and nieces appear to have lost the relish they once possessed for the beauties of Shakespeare, and quotations from the works of that immortal bard. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.